We're back in session, so we will be taking up Senate Bill 7, corporate income tax. We heard this bill yesterday. We had some questions. We held it over to see if members, after hearing the testimony and hearing some of the questions and answers, if there was any additional concerns. Senator Olson, did you have any additional questions or concerns you would like to ask the sponsor or the sponsor staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Every time you go ahead and look at a issue like this that's in dealing with corporate income taxes, one of the biggest, some of the bigger corporations that are around it, whether they're making money or losing money is not the issue, but the issue has to do with some of the native corporations. And I was wondering, have you heard anything from any of the native corporations, the for-profit corporations throughout the state of Alaska as to whether they're going to be affected and how they're going to be affected by this bill?
For the record, my name is Margaret Dowling. I'm staff to Senator Giesel, and through the chair, Senator Olson. We have Joanna Bales and Robin Wilson online to answer questions, but just to briefly address your question, we did have a few gentlemen come by the office with a sense of excitement about this bill who represented named corporations, and we expect to see letters of support or one letter of support from one of those entities. But beyond that, I'd like to defer the question to Joanna Bales.
Okay. So as a follow-up, Mr. Chairman, you have not received anything in writing, either email or otherwise, that shows their support or lack of support for it?
Neither way at this point, but as I said, we expect something soon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Olson. Ms. Bales, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We'll try to raise the volume a little bit. Did you hear Senator Olson's question on how this would impact the Alaska Native corporations?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chairman. And through the chair, Senator Olson, the effect of this bill on all corporations is a minor reduction in tax. So we expect that there will be no opposition from any corporations to this legislation, and that would include the native corporations. They would also see a tax break or tax relief under this provision.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Good. Okay. Additional questions? Okay, seeing none, I appreciate the sponsor's intent here. I believe her intent is to help businesses in general in Alaska, primarily small business, but you know, all businesses will benefit from this. So I don't see any reason to hold the bill. Senator Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Finance Committee SB 7, Corporate Income Tax Version U, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Any objections? Seeing none, bill passes committee. Thank you very much for joining us. All right, we'll go on now to Senate Bill 12, Public Procurement. Let's see, similar situation here. We Vice Chair Fairclough introduced the bill. We did take public testimony on this. I think, Senator Fairclough, either you or your staff were going to briefly go through the sectional analysis, take any additional questions committee members may have, and that will go from there. So, Senator Fairclough, the floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask Vern Jones and Laura Pierre to join us at the mic.
Please.
And they'll walk through the bill.
Okay. Good morning, Senate Finance. For the record, Laura Pierre, staff to Senator Fairclough. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to go through section by section of the bill. I don't know if it would be beneficial for Vern to briefly explain the procurement process, just to give members a little bit of understanding when going through the section. It might be easier to understand that way.
Okay, that'd be fine. Mr. Jones?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Vern Jones. I'm the state's chief procurement officer. I work in Department of Administration. I think rather than going through each and every section, I could go over probably the highlights and explain what the bill does.
That would be preferred, yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Section 1 is similar to a lot of the sections in the bill in that it is a technical change, and it renumbers and moves a preference. Section 2 is also a common change in the bill in that this section affects the local agricultural preference. And like it does with other preferences, it makes the language of the preference consistent. It doesn't change the percentage, but it makes application simpler and consistent with all the other preferences. Down to Section 5, there, and I'm sorry, I'm skipping through, but I think I've covered in general the kinds of changes we're making here. Section 5 is a section that changes the salary range for the chief procurement officer. It moves it down, and that reflects a change in the Division of General Services and a change in the duties that the chief procurement officer performs. Section 6 through 10 are more technical changes on preferences and moving them to a common section. Section 11 amends the small procurement threshold for leases. Right now, the threshold is 3,000 square feet. Above that, you use a formal procurement process. This changes that threshold to 7,000 feet. Section 12 is a little more substantive. It clarifies when business licenses are required for formal bids and proposals. This was a change recommended by legislative audit several years ago. Right now, the statute says you've got to have a business license at the time you submit your bid or proposal. What this change would affect is that you would have to have a business license prior to getting an award. You'd still have to have your business license and qualify under the Alaska bidder preference section to get the preference. So you'd have to be in business for 6 months previous to the bid with a place of business staffed by the bidder or employees. But you could still submit a bid without a license, not get the preference, and still get the award as long as you got your license prior to the award. And the reason that change is made is because there have been several instances where we have a big project, no in-state firms are interested or qualified to do the business. So we're talking about all big multinational corporations competing for our business, none of them here, and one of them who happened to be the low bidder failed to get a $200 business license. So we weren't able to make the award. That's happened several times, and this addresses that situation. Section 13 does away with our vendor lists, which is an older methodology where we, you know, mail out procurement opportunities to folks. We've gone online. This is no longer needed, the department is now implementing an automated procurement system, and this just does away with that outdated requirement. Down to Section 15, this clarifies, similar to Section 12, when you have to have a construction contractor registration. It's similar to what I mentioned in Section 12. Same with Section 16, clarifies the Alaska business license requirements. Down to Section 18, this is another section where this is substantive change, where again amending the small procurement threshold. Right now it's $50,000 for goods and services. That would be doubled to $100,000. These amounts haven't been changed since the early 90s. For construction, right now the small procurement threshold is 100,000. This would change it to double it to 200,000. And as I mentioned before in Section 7, the size of a lease for formal procurement would be above 7,000. Right now it's 3,000 square feet. Section 19 is another substantive section. This is where all these technical changes moving renumbering preferences. This is where all the preferences that I've spoken about would wind up, which is 3630, a new section 3630.321. So the Alaska bidder, the disabled bidder, the Alaska veteran preference, all of those would wind up in 321. So this simplifies this section. It's a long section. It simplifies and clarifies the requirement for a disability preference. You heard from several veterans yesterday. We're allowing third-party qualification for groups like PERS and TERS and Social Security Administration and VA, third-party qualification for disabilities. It also eliminates a preference on the books now, employers of people with disabilities preference. That's we have a separate preference for folks who employ 50% or more disabled people. It's seldom used. We think it probably has benefited a total of 3 people. This will, even when we eliminate that, we will still have 2 disability-related preferences remaining: the disabled bidder preference and the employment program preference. This section also, an important change, excludes real estate leases from the application of preferences. And the idea behind that is when you're talking about renting or leasing an office space, you're interested in the building, the space. It's in Alaska. It doesn't really matter what the ownership is. So that's several substantive changes. Section 21 clarifies which preferences are cumulative. These preferences can be stacked, certain ones can, but you wouldn't want to give, for example, an agricultural product preference and an Alaska bidder preference, because they're essentially the same thing. You would want to give either or, so those aren't stackable. But a veteran preference and Alaska bidder preference are stackable. Down to, let's see, section 23 moves, doesn't change the definition for Alaska bidder, but it moves it. And we have new definitions for in writing and written to include electronic submissions, so that we're able to take advantage of today's technology and accept electronic bids and proposals without an actual page with a signature on it. I think that, Mr. Chairman, are all the substantive, non-technical kinds of changes in the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that explanation. And I do appreciate the updating our procurement code and trying to make us a little more efficient using various electronic devices. As you know, we still have a long ways to go in that area, but that's a subject for another day. The only question I had was on Section 5. I noticed we're messing with, is this your job? We're changing your grade?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Around 2002.
You support that?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I do, and the reason is the job is changing. Around 2002, but before 2002, I should say, there was a Director of General Services and the Chief Procurement Officer, two separate positions. In 2002, I was the Chief Procurement Officer, and I then assumed overall responsibilities for the division, and I have since then acted as Chief Procurement Officer and Division Director for General Services. This change would coincide with our plans in Department of Administration, which are to establish a director position that does not exist there now, and have a director manage the division, have the chief procurement officer then focus on procurement matters and statewide procurement. And I think that's a good change because right now your chief procurement officer spends a good percentage of his time doing things other than procurement, like office space leasing, surplus property, running a mail room, managing facilities. So I think this allows the chief procurement officer, or will allow him or her, to really focus on procurement, which I think is the legislative intent.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, committee members? Senator Olson and Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at the vendor list you talked about, I don't remember the sponsor the other day said that there was an antiquated vendor list that's out there, and you go into all computer, essentially an all computer type system where people can vote or can go ahead and bid online or make their communications online. The problem that, or I guess the question that I have, as you look at some of these issues, and especially some of the people that are disadvantaged that are out there, how do you make sure that they have an equal footing as far as trying to go ahead and get there if they don't have computers, don't have access to either broadband or something like that? For example, if somebody's out in the village and he's a contractor or has a contractor's license or is able to go ahead and try and bid on something that's going on locally, he obviously has the advantage of knowing the situation, knowing the project, knowing the people that are available locally to go ahead and be laborers on the project, but he doesn't have a computer and certainly doesn't have the bandwidth. For example, Golovin, where I come from, in order to get access to the online, you've got to go either sit outside the school if it's locked or go inside of the school itself to try and get internet. And it applies also to vets that may not be able to go ahead and afford or may not have the technological know-how to go ahead and bid for some of these things, and goes as far as to the disabled that you also talked about, to see if they have the ability. How do we make sure that the playing field is level for those people that were just mentioned, if you're going just to a computer system?
Through the chair, Senator Olson's excellent question. There's going to be a transition period where, you know, not connected with this bill, the state is implementing an automated procurement system as part of our ERP called IRIS, and the state will have an automated procurement system. And we have, that project has resources set aside for vendor education and to bring vendors along. Eventually, though, I think folks will have to gain access some way. I know many communities have libraries and other areas where they can go to get internet access. So I know that's going to be an education effort by the state to bring people along, but I should also point out that even now, these vendor lists are not required. We're required to keep them, but we're not required to use them. So right now, everything is posted on the online public notice system. When IRIS comes up, they'll be posted on IRIS instead. So we're already online. We're already really these lists, we are required by law to maintain them, but they really have fallen out of use. I can't remember the last time someone called up our offices and asked for a vendor list to mail out things to people. We typically don't, even now we don't do that. So all this, I understand the challenge, but all this section does is remove a requirement that is really not even used anymore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank the sponsor, Senator Faircuth, for bringing this legislation forward. I think it moves the state of Alaska forward and helps corporations. I own several corporations, and I'm chairman of the Bethel Native Corporation. The question that I have, and I know the process is quite cumbersome for filling out the applications, does this legislation help streamline that?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, it allows for automation of the formal bids and procurements, so that is a streamlining. I think that'll be simpler, especially once we get IRIS up. It'll be much easier for businesses to go online and to submit bids by populating forms rather than having to start with a blank piece of paper and writing out an RFP, for example. But I think maybe more pertinent to your question is the raising of these thresholds, the small procurement thresholds. A lot of business that we do now that requires a formal, lengthy, difficult to navigate through formal RFP or ITB response, will now be in the less formal small procurement category. Instead of getting, say, 125-page request for a proposal for a $75,000 project, they will get maybe a 4 to 10-page questionnaire that they fill out and send back. I think for a good majority of procurements, it will remove barriers of complexity, and we've been told over and over again that complexity is the biggest barrier to people doing business with the government.
And I think that's one of the major benefits to this this piece of legislation. It's going to make it much easier for Alaskan small business to participate in the process. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Bishop.
Again, I'd like to also concur with Senator Hoffman's statements to the sponsor. Section 19 in particular, it streamlines and cuts out redundancy and disability determinations for veterans. We heard some great testimony there yesterday, and it'll be very an efficient move going forward to working with our veterans and moving forward.
Okay, any other questions? I think with those glowing endorsements, we better move while we can here. I do appreciate the sponsor too staying with this bill. I know you attempted this last year, and hopefully you'll have better luck this year. So if there's no other additional questions, there's a zero fiscal note. Hopefully you might even see some savings by this. So Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass from Senate Finance Committee SB 12, the Public Procurement Bill Version N, from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Any objections? Seeing none, bill passes committee. Okay, let's go on now to some of the board extensions. Senate Bill 37. Extend Suicide Prevention Council. And let's see where we're at here. This is a new bill we haven't heard yet. Senator Fairclough, I believe, is the sponsor of this one as well. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee, SB 37 is an act extending the termination date of Alaska's Statewide Suicide Prevention Council. It's been my pleasure for the past several years to serve on Alaska's Suicide Prevention Council, and I'm here to tell you that they're doing a good job. With changes that you've supported in the past, attendance at each of these meetings has increased. The council has put together a statewide strategic plan that they're in the process of implementing. They're working with partners statewide to implement the plan. We're increasing public awareness, social media, and again, partnering with communities around Alaska. As you know, Alaska has the highest rate of suicide in our nation, nearly twice the national average. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we're asking for the extension to the maximum amount possible to 2019. I believe that there is no legislative audit findings, and the committee and the council is working well. I ask for your support.
Okay, thank you, Senator Fairclough. You know, I think we'll take a brief at ease here.
All right, we are back in session here, taking up Senate Bill 37. We did hear from the sponsor. At this time, I think we should hear from the chief auditor and get your comments, and then we'll go right into public testimony. I have Kate Burkhart, who is the executive director for suicide prevention, so we'll take you up next. So if you could, Chris, please put yourself on record.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. Our agency did conduct a sunset review of the statewide Suicide Prevention Council. Basic objective of the audit was to determine whether the council was serving the public's interest and whether they should be extended. Overall, we conclude the council has served the public's interest, and we recommend the council's termination date be extended 6 years until June 30th, 2019. We found the council had made notable improvements since we last reviewed their operations in 2008. Improvements are attributed to the organizational alignment with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. Starting in 2010, the executive director for both of these entities also began to serve as executive director for the council. This co-location makes sense given that oftentimes suicide is linked with mental illness and/or drug abuse. It has allowed all three of these entities to coordinate their activities and leverage their funding. Our audit lists out the numerous activities the council has undertaken that Senator Fairclough has already described. One of the biggest accomplishments we found was the development of a new statewide suicide prevention plan. Also of significance was the council's outreach to the Alaska Native communities and tribal leaders. While it is clear that the organizational co-location has been very successful, we recognize that the current organizational structure may not continue over the long term because there was no formal agreement in place to ensure the executive director's time and abilities would continue to be shared effectively among the organizations. So we recommended the council formalize the current leadership structure through a written agreement, and we also recommended the council evaluate the position as required by statute. The audit included two other recommendations. We consider these more housekeeping types of things. We recommended the council monitor meeting attendance, inform the Office of the Governor of poor attendance, and we also recommend the council develop and monitor performance measures that support their statutory duties and annually report progress. Both the council and the department agreed with the recommendations.
Very good. Questions? Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, I'm not sure who to direct this, but on the fiscal note, there appears to be a request for an increase in the budget for travel, and I'm just wondering if whoever could just explain that.
Well, we'll have the sponsor, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to wait till Kate got up there. There is a note for increased travel and commodities, but she can speak to that when she comes forward.
Okay. Yeah, usually we do the fiscal notes last, so that way maybe some of the questions on that will be addressed through the public testimony. But thank you for that question, and thank you for your testimony. Okay, then, let's go on then to Kate Burkhart. Kate? Yeah, are you both testifying and
together?
Okay, and that's great. Just both make sure you put your name on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kate Burkhart, and I'm the executive director of the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council, as well as the Alaska Mental Health Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. And with me today, I have the chairman of the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council, William Martin. My comments today will be brief. I'd like to touch on the work the council has done to respond to the recommendations from the legislative audit and to speak to the fiscal note. The auditors made three recommendations that Ms. Curtis has spoken about. In response to the first recommendation, the council executive committee partnered with the executive committees of the other two boards to conduct an evaluation of my performance last fall. So the evaluation has been done, and a process to do an annual evaluation in December each year has now been put into place. So that's taken care of. The executive committees also work together to memorialize our current leadership and resource sharing situation in a memorandum of agreement around the same time. So that has been signed, and we have put into place a memorialization of how we do business. So that is our response to recommendation number one. Recommendation number two about reporting attendance. We implemented an attendance log in July of 2012 at the beginning of the fiscal year, and we will provide that at the end of each fiscal year to the governor's office as well as to the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House so that everyone understands how we're doing with attendance. The sponsor noted, and I am particularly proud of this, we have achieved a quorum at every regular meeting of the council since the beginning of fiscal year 11. So 2010, which doesn't sound like a huge accomplishment, except that the council struggled to achieve a quorum for many years prior to that. And our ability to achieve our statutory duties is due in part to that regular attendance and active attendance. Recommendation three around the performance measures for the council. The council does have performance measures. There have been a series of iterations. In the beginning, they had to do with the individual performance of each council member, which is not really appropriate for a state advisory board. They have since moved to tracking population indicators. Those are listed in the state plan and will be tracked each year. Not all of those apply to the council's actual performance. A lot of those have to do with our partners' activities. We are working with the Department of Health and Social Services to translate those indicators and performance measures into the same language as what the Office of Management and Budget does. And so we hope to have fully complied with that recommendation by the end of the fiscal year. So that is our response to legislative audit's recommendations. I want to emphasize that the process with legislative audit was of great benefit to the council. We learned quite a bit about ways we could improve the way we do business and our performance, and so I just want to emphasize to you the great process with legislative audit. It was really good for us and hopefully for you guys. The fiscal note. So you will note that beginning in 2015, the fiscal note shows an increase of $44,600 per year. $18,600 of that is for travel. Currently, the council's travel budget does not permit it to meet outside of the Anchorage Bowl area with any regularity. Since 2010, the council has only been able to make two trips outside of the Bowl area. That is one to Kotzebue in August of 2010 and one to Barrow in October of 2011. The council feels that this restricts its ability to maintain those partnerships with our rural communities and our tribal organizations, and it restricts their ability to represent and to learn from the people of Alaska outside of the road system. The largest number of suicides occur in the Anchorage Bowl area, but the highest rates are in rural Alaska, and the council wants to be able to serve those people as well. Currently, the council does utilize teleconferencing and video conferencing technology to try to reach those folks. But as you well know, especially with an issue that impacts our families and our individuals like this, a face-to-face communication and support is very important. So that is what that $18,600 is for travel. I know some folks were wondering if council members have been unable to attend meetings due to our current travel budget. Council members have instead figured out a way for everybody to participate within our budget. So it's not an issue of some people can't come. It's an issue of we can't go to our constituents. The fiscal note also includes $20,000 for projects. The council has prioritized in the state plan, which is based on the input of literally hundreds of Alaskans around the state, the need for Alaska-specific research on the factors that contribute to suicide. This funding would allow the council to seed that research with our partners here in the state, with the university and Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. This would not be funding used specifically for council activities, but would instead allow us to achieve those goals under Strategy 6 in the state plan. There is an additional $8,700 for printing costs, video conferencing, webinar support, and that is to reflect the fact that with the council's increased presence around the state and the increased quality of our work, the demand for our products, our technical assistance, and our support has increased beyond our capacity to meet it. And so we are not able to provide, you'll notice we web publish everything. We're not able to provide printed copies of our state plan because it's cost prohibitive. We're not able to host the webinars to provide technical assistance that is asked of us. And so that $8,700 is to allow us to do that. All three of those things are within our statutory responsibilities to enhance suicide prevention services and programs throughout the state, to develop healthy communities through comprehensive, collaborative, community-based and faith-based approaches, and to strengthen existing and build new partnerships with public and private entities. So this is not an expansion of our world. This is the funding we need to actually continue to do our job and do it well.
Mr. Martin, did you have additional comments?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity to be here to testify this morning to advocate for the extension of the State Suicide Prevention Council. For the record, my name is Bill Martin. I'm currently retired, but my life work now is with suicide prevention, both on the state, local, regional, and the national level. I was appointed to the Suicide Council 10 years ago, and it seems like at that time we were spinning a lot of wheels and trying to figure out what the problems are with suicides among our people. But over the period of time in the last 3 or 4 years, we have come to some definite conclusions and things that we feel that can help the communities in the different regions of the state. 3 years ago, we had a summit here in Juneau, and last year we had one in Anchorage, and it was brought together people from all over Alaska and to share their ideas and to share the things that are going on in the communities. We have found that there is a great advocate for suicide prevention where in the past we couldn't get people to even talk about it. So it's one of the accomplishments that we've had is that we have got the tribes and the communities to be able to talk about suicide prevention in their region. And so this, we weren't able to be able to go to different communities, but we're trying something a little bit different. And next week, me and another member on the Suicide Council will be traveling to Nenana and speak with the school children, the people in the communities of all phases of that community about suicide. We decided that three places would be good to visit. One is the interior, the northwest, and the YK Delta. And so different members of the community will be going there because we just can't afford to all go at the same time. But we can carry our message, we can carry our plan with us. And the plan is not something that everybody can use as it is written, but it can be taken into perspective and a plan devised for their own region. We have also discovered that, one of the things that we discovered is that in the United States, the highest rate of suicide is with the elders, and lower rates are with the young people. But in Alaska, that seems to be reversed. And having spent my life in numbers and computers and logic, I tried to look at that and see what is the reason behind that. And the suicide rates for the younger people has only been in existence for about 40 years in Alaska. And I can look at that and think that it attributed to our change in lifestyle. When I was growing up, there was a great relationship with my aunties and my uncles, and they took a great responsibility in the upbringing of all of our children. But now it's not there. Many of the things that I learned, our younger people now are not learning. Even myself as an uncle, we're not able to communicate with the nephews and nieces as they were in the past, just because a change of lifestyle. And so we need to be able to get young people to understand that there are differences. And one of the major differences is that we as Alaska Natives are very sensitive people. When you look at when you look at us and we're in a community or in a social function or meetings, there's lots of laughter. You just see it. There's happiness and joy with seeing your friends and relatives. But on the opposite of that, because the pendulum swings, we're also hurt very easily. And the simplest thing is a breakup of a young girl or a young boy with somebody that they feel like is the perfect person that would be with them the rest of their life is devastating. And we need to be able to reach these young people and explain to them that certain things when you're growing up is normal. You know, just because there's one person, your boyfriend or girlfriend, is not there anymore doesn't mean that there won't be somebody else, or doesn't mean that it's for the not for the best. And so those are the things that we learn from our uncles and our aunties. But that portion in the last 40 years, because the change of our lifestyle, the change of the raising of children in the communities is changed. When I was younger, I was able to go fishing on a seine boat. Now the kids from my community, they can't do that. There are no seine boats. Or the younger ladies would work with their aunties and their grandmothers on skills and skills involving sewing, or you know that's not a good word to use, but just a what's the right word for it? Yeah. So the camaraderie between these growing up kids today is different than it was in the process that had worked for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so we need to change and let people know that those things are there and those things are normal. And so hopefully by being able to split up our committee and be able to go to different places, that we can carry the message forward. And with the increase in funding, we're hoping that we'll be able to do that. But we do now have definite ideas on what can help in the suicide prevention in this state. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me this time. Be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Questions for either Mr. Martin or Ms. Burkhart? Senator Olson.
The only question I have, I think, is for the executive director. If there's a vote coming up on the council, are they able to vote if they're able to call in as opposed to being present?
Senator Olson, through the chair, yes, sir. Our bylaws do permit a telephonic full participation and vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Additional questions? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much for your testimony. Let's see. I'm not sure. Is it Gretchen Neely? Did you want to testify, or were you here for questions?
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. While you're coming up, Senator Fairclough, you want to make a comment? Yeah. Why not?
For those of you here today, in an effort to support this bill being moved, the bells are ringing, and so we can continue public hearing or we can move the bill, and I'm not trying to discourage anyone from testifying, but there is another bill that has a video that they'd like to show us that's 5 minutes, and so I just please testify before us, but if you could be succinct, we'll be here.
Well, I think you're the only one I have signed up to testify yet, so we'll go ahead and take your testimony, and then probably we'll take up these special education on Monday, so because we are running short on time. So with that, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Gretchen Neely. I am the outreach coordinator for the Alaska Brain Injury Network, and I serve the state. There's only three of us that work full-time. But previous to that, I served 9 years with the Alaska Joint Force Headquarters for the National Guard and Support Services, oversaw the suicide prevention program, and I can tell you that I have traveled the state and I've helped the state, and they need the outreach. They need the finances to go out. It was me and one other person, and I've been all over to every village and doing suicide prevention, and the finances just aren't there anymore. I'm getting the same request now through traumatic brain injury. And I have people surviving from traumatic brain injury who are also asking for the same services because they're frustrated with no resources for medical or they're suffering from drug addiction. And so there's a definite need. And so to push this forward would be the only thing that would be possible. I also have a son who suffers from mental illness and is addicted to drugs. It's on a personal level.
Okay. Well, very, very good. I appreciate that testimony. And in my mind, this is probably one of the most important bills we'll be taking up this year. So thank you. Was there anybody else who wanted to testify this morning? If not, we will close public testimony. I think the bill is pretty self-explanatory, and I think the need has been very well conveyed this morning with the three people who have testified. I'm fine with moving this. What's the committee members wish? Okay, very good. Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I would move SB 37 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. I believe that is version. I don't have the version in front of me. Oh, it's.
I don't think it's been changed. So it'd be version.
Let's get that motion.
Version A. Yeah. Okay. Any objections? Saying none, bill passes committee. Okay. So I apologize for the folks here for SB 17. We'll take you up Monday first thing, and then we'll have the video set and ready to go. And actually, it looks like that's the only bill we have scheduled for Monday. We do have a busy week, though, next week. Let me just run through that very quickly, because I know we have to get on the floor. Tuesday, the 26th, we're going to take up some interesting bills, Senate Bill 27, Senate Bill 26. One has to do with the dredge and fill activities. 26 is land disposal exchanges and water rights. Senate Wednesday is scheduled Interstate Mining Compact Commission, and then Thursday, one that I know Senator Kelly will be chairing the meeting, has to do with the LNG project. It's Senate Bill 23. If we get the oil tax bill, which is possible next week, we'll of course take that up as well Thursday and or Friday. So next week will be very busy. Once we get the oil tax bill, we will have meetings both the morning and the afternoon. And I think most of you have got the email on that. Any questions from committee members? Am I forgetting anything? Okay. If not, then we're adjourned till Monday. Everybody have a good weekend. Monday at 9 o'clock. Sorry, I thought.